What's up, nerds? Welcome back to another episode of Canode Knows, brought to you by Dig BMX. On this week's episode, I talk with Dustin Lee. Dustin, not Justin, on Instagram. I think it's well known that he was a part of Rodeo Peanut, and Rodeo Peanut was a big part of the BMX world for a little bit. So we talked about that a little bit, but I honestly wanted to talk to him most about his job because he's doing what I do, but for Gary Vee, which is pretty rad. So we get into that. And he's been riding. He's a lifelong BMX rider. Reps Merritt, and he's from New Jersey. And I really enjoyed our conversation. So hope you do too. If you're watching on YouTube, smash that like. Well, smash that like and subscribe. You get it. Let's get into it.
How's my audio? I guess
it's pretty good.
Cool.
You like defaulted. So what I tell everybody is like, if you're doing it on your phone, the wired headphones is the best way to go. Like AirPods are good, but they're further away from your mouth, and the closer the mic is to your mouth, you already know, you're a film guy.
Yeah.
You know the vibes. Hi, Dustin. Not Justin. Dustin Lee.
Hello.
Welcome to Canode Knows.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here, Bobby.
Yeah. So, who started Rodeo Peanut?
We're just going right into it.
Well, so, hold on. Let me, for those of you who don't know who Rodeo or what Rodeo Peanut was, it was a meme account that started, and it was a mix of Seinfeld clips. It was like calling out people landing in grass. It was all these unwritten rules and a jokey account. And I don't really know like the whole arch of it. I just tuned in every once in a while. Like it was like just a meme page for the BMX industry, and like it felt fun for me, but then I saw a little bit of drama, and then it fizzled out and died. There was like copycats that came up. There was one dude that moved to Arizona, started his own version of Rodeo Peanut of like the Arizona scene, and took it way too far in the DMs, just like calling people like just absurd insults that you would never say, because under the guise of anonymity, you find out who that person is and you don't fuck with them anymore. Like that dude's since moved away and nobody likes him in the scene.
So that's really kind of why like I wanted to step away from it, because it was getting to a point where it's like it's getting taken too seriously. It's taken out of there's no context there, because like people aren't like necessarily friends, or right. They don't even know who like we are, so it's like hard to like joke around with someone that isn't necessarily your friend.
Yeah.
So it was getting to a point where I was like, I don't think this is right anymore. And that's why I just didn't feel comfortable doing it anymore.
Who's the one that, are you into Seinfeld? I see your YouTube banner is the ass man, and I fuck with that so hard. I love Seinfeld.
Yeah. Seinfeld was definitely more of my influence, I guess you could say. I mean, everyone on there was a fan, but I think I was like the super fan.
Hell yeah.
Or like I've gone to trivias and stuff where I've won trivias like a bunch of times.
I've always wanted to do that. I'm the same. Like I've watched it 1,000 times. Give me a trivia question.
What's the name of the, in the episode where the robbery, when Kramer leaves Jerry's door open, he names the model of the deadbolt lock. What
Holy
is the name of that?
Shit, bro. You knew that in a trivia?
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My God.
It's the Clapco D29 for anyone that actually is listening.
That is insane. Okay, yeah. I'm not as much of a Seinfeld buff as I thought, dude. What kind of genius are you, man? That's wild.
Well, I went to my first trivia, and then the questions were super deep like that, and I'm like, what? Like, I had no idea. And then after that, I just started like studying like crazy.
Got that shit memorized. I remember I moved to Orlando to work for Sabrosa, and I was really lonely, and like that was the first that when I was going to bed, I would put on Seinfeld to not feel alone. And then that's when my love for it started, you know. And just I almost had them like memorized, and like there's particular seasons where it's like, okay, I'm gonna skip this season because this writer left or whatever, but I fucking love Seinfeld.
I used to have a DVD player in my car, like in the front,
so nice.
Like, I I installed it technically illegally, so you could play it while you're driving. And nice. I would just play all my DVDs anywhere I was going. Probably not the safest thing, but it definitely helped me get better at trivia.
Well, we'll get back to Rodeo Peanut maybe, but where'd you grow up and like how'd you get into BMX?
So born and raised in New Jersey. I got into BMX, I guess in fifth grade first. So when I was like maybe 11.
How old are you now?
37. I'll be 37. 38. Yeah, I'll be 38 in November.
Nice.
But I remember some kid had a dyno. He had a dyno VFR, and it was like the coolest bike. And I begged my parents to get me something similar. So they got me a dyno NSX, which was like the cheapest dyno you could get at the time. We were just pretty much like rode around town, nothing crazy. And then one day I saw my friend, my best friend, he like wanted to go to this park and build some dirt jumps. I helped him build it. They were like, it was like a tiny little four pack, and I was like scared out of my mind. I jumped it, both of them, and I was like, and I just had like the craziest adrenaline rush. And this is my first memory of like really riding, and I was like, whoa, like I can't believe I did that. And it was just like hooked from that point on.
Yeah. And then time goes on, and then what was like the first let's see, 38, so you're around the era of like you're coming of age a little bit before me, so it's still magazines and like DVDs.
Yeah.
At this like point, what was the first video that influenced you?
First video I remember watching was Ride Thunder. You probably don't even, I don't even know if you know what that is.
I don't know.
It was by Ride the magazine.
Yeah.
I guess also BMX Inferno was in that group also, which is by S&M. But I'd say like I grew up like idolizing, I guess, like Don't Quit Your Day Job guys,
because
they're from New Jersey. And also like the video before that, Grizzle, was like one of the first ones I saw. And at first I hated it. I thought it was stupid, but now I love it. But Day Job was definitely like the video that was like, whoa, this is crazy. I mean, even though Criminal Mischief came out, Seek and Destroy came out before that, but it was still like Don't Quit Your Day Job was definitely like the eye opener for me.
Yeah. Just street riding. It's so sick, dude.
Yeah. And especially in New Jersey, where like I didn't think anyone even rode. Like I thought it was just like me and my three friends pretty much that rode.
Who was the first like, you know, name that you saw or that you met that you geeked out on? Like who's a pro from New Jersey?
I guess the first big name would be Ralph Sinisi.
You met him in person?
No, I met the first person from New Jersey that I met was probably George DeSantos. He came to our local trails, and I was like, that's George. Because he had the yellow bike, and he had like he had the fro at the time, or I think dreads, I forget. But I just recognized him right away, and I'm like, oh man, it's George DeSantos.
That's so cool.
But I went to Woodward.
What was he like? What was George DeSantis like?
He was really, I guess, introverted. Like he wasn't mean, but he didn't he just said what's up, and that was pretty much it. Like he said, hey, what's up? But he didn't like talk to us or anything. And I get it. But now we're like super cool. Like I could always hit him up now, and like I see him at the Tizio Jam all the time. We just, you know, shoot the shit and stuff like that.
Dope. Yeah, that's always how it is. Like BMX, right? Well, especially when you're a young kid or a teenager, you're like, you put them up on a pedestal, and then as you get older, you realize they're just people. Like,
yeah.
For me, my first person that I met was Drew Hosselton, that I was like obsessed with, or just like, oh my God. And I was freaking out to my buddy Jimmy, and that's Drew Hosselton. He showed up at the local spot, and then same thing, just like very introverted. I said, hi, Drew. And then he's like, hey, and then just keeps on riding. I'm like, okay. Keep on going.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, definitely like with George, I understand, because like he was just like a local guy, like probably was just like weirded out by someone even recognizing him.
It's trippy. I wonder what George is up to now. Do you know? Do you stay in touch with him?
Not really. When I talked to him last time, I think he's still like really into the whole like car scene. I think he works at Audi, like as maybe, I forget. I'm not sure though, but that's I know cool. He's definitely into cars. I forget everything else.
It's interesting. Blur. Yeah. All right. So you were about to say after you met George and then.
I mean, I guess I grew up also like idolizing like Taj and Joe Rich.
Yeah.
Like, because I think my actual first real video was probably that Woodward promo video, like Colony of Summer 2. It's like something they sent out to like as like a free video to like, I guess, people that either plan to go there or if you're interested in going there.
Nice.
Kind of thing. It was like way before edits on the internet.
Yeah. Was it a VHS or a...
Yeah. Nice. I remember watching that, and then I went to Woodward when I was in sixth grade, when I was like 12, with my best friend, and we're like hoping to run into George and or Taj and Joe Rich. Yeah. And it's like we went the last week of Woodward, yeah. And there was nobody there.
Yeah.
Except I think the biggest name that at the time was Ryan Corrigan. Like, I didn't even know who he was. I just, like, remembered his name and then remember seeing him in, like, FBM videos, like, years later. I was like, oh, that was that guy.
That's that dude I met that one time.
Yeah.
Crazy. What? I mean, I see you rep Merit. How did, like, what's the journey to getting hooked up with Merit? I mean, Merit's not even that old, right? Like, that's...
I think they started in 2013.
Yeah, that's about where I was going to guess. Like, the... Or late tens, or not yeah. late tens, but early tens.
I mean, started with Sean Curran and Mike Brennan. I grew up riding with Mike. I met him when I was around 16. So I think he was like 19 at the time, or maybe 17, I forget. But since we grew up together, like we were just always friends. We still are friends. I actually was at the warehouse Monday.
Nice.
But yeah, I just like to stay in. I mean, we've been friends ever since. So he pretty much just hooked me up, like, because we're riding all the time and we're just like best friends. And so, yeah, I'm just like.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Just part of the team because, like, through friends and stuff.
Mike Brennan is one of those dudes that I don't think I've ever met in person. Maybe I've been in the same, like, event as him at one point, but. Like, just the sprocket to over on buck shit is, we still talk about it. It comes up at sessions. Like, we were just sessioning a little, like, I don't, not even a sub box, just a little ledge. And I dropped into a sprocket and I was like, okay, I'm going to pop in. And it's so fucking hard. And
yeah,
Mike Brennan's name came up. Like, how the hell did he do all that? What's, I mean, aside from explaining that trick, what's Mike like being around? Like, he seems like he could be either, you know, an intimidating dude or, just I don't know. What's he like?
I mean, I could see why people think he's intimidating, but he's actually really, really polite to like strangers. Like whenever anytime someone says hi to him, he like, I see him being super nice all the time. Just says like, hi, hey, how you doing? Like pretty much like a normal person, but like very nice. I could tell like the beard and like the shaved head kind of seems a little bit intimidating.
Yeah. What's your favorite memory with Mike?
I guess. Oh man. There's like a lot of different ones, like not even like BMX related. Like he's just always had my back. And
like how?
I remember when I was like, maybe like, yeah, I was probably like 16 or 17. Like, I think I was like about to get into a fight or something. And it was supposed to be like a fight with like one person. And then, of course, that person decides to call 50 of his friends. And I'm like, fuck, now I'm fucked. And then it ended up like not happening. But like, I still, and then I called them after, was just like, yo, like
can you come through, like, just like, just so I'm not like all by myself here. And he's like, and he like came right away, like,
nice,
from like three towns over,
homie.
Yeah,
that's sick.
But I guess another time was like when he first got his WRX. Like, we were just, he was just driving like a maniac all the time, and it was just fun to like just drive, like, when he just didn't give a fuck. I mean, I guess you could see it with some of his bike riding, but yeah, there were just like a lot of, we've had so many like different things happen.
There are a lot of Mike Brennan clips out there that's like, I don't give a fuck. Like the epic tail whip into the bank. Like, yeah. That's probably the craziest thing.
I mean, to your point, like the sprocket over in Insight on that, like it was like a bench, like a picnic table set up to that fence.
Yeah.
And then that was my favorite clip ever. Like,
yeah, it's the most memorable shit.
Yeah. I remember like first time I saw it, I was like, what the fuck? Like, cause just that drop was like insane. I was like, it was just like that one blew my mind.
I want to know the story behind it. Like, was it first try, or like, how do you even, dude, I don't understand the trick. Like, where do you get the leverage to just pop over kids these days, you know? Mike Brennan, Mike Brennan, you talented son of a bitch.
Yeah, I mean, he tried to teach me how to do it once, but it was pretty much like, you just kind of use your feet really more than like, like, you first kind of like pop off your feet on your shoe, like on the actual rail or whatever it is, and then you just got to tuck the back end, I think. But
I can imagine it, but I, like, when I'm on my bike and I'm in that position, I'm
totally like, the problem that I always run into is like I lean way too far forward and then just nosedive into like whatever I'm landing on, so like it's really hard to even out, like if you're doing it to flat or something. Yeah, like that,
I would just go straight to my face on that clip. On that fence clip.
Yeah, but he was really good at that. I don't know how, he just had the control on it. Maybe his height helped him, I don't know.
Maybe that's a cheat code. What's your most proudest accomplishment in the BMX world? Dustin Lee? Dustin, not Justin.
I don't know. I mean, I guess my one trick that I always was super psyched about was this. I was at this pool, but like it wasn't a smooth pool, so it was more of like a bank to ledge. And I fakie to it and just did a half cap tooth and just like held a tooth for like a good 2 seconds. And then
that's gotta feel sick.
Yeah, I was just like stuck there. I'm like, oh shit. I came to fakie and it was just like the perfect clip. I've posted on my Instagram like a million times just because like that's my
favorite clip.
Yeah, it's my favorite clip.
That's dope.
And I'm pretty sure I'll never be able to do it again.
Well, that's dope. Did you get to go on any trips like with all these guys? Like, I feel like, so when I think of you and I think of Rodeo Peanut, I think of also Jared Washington. Are you homies with him? Mike, like, did you guys go on, did you get to tag along on any of the you know, I guess.
No, not really.
Animal trips or anything?
No, not really. Because I was always like working full time. So like, I didn't feel comfortable taking time off to do that. Yeah. I mean, I regret it now because I should have just done it. But
where'd you get that work ethic from?
I have no idea. I think probably from my parents, to be honest, because like they never take days off.
And, where are your parents? Where's your family from?
They're from Korea. They moved. I forget when they moved here, but before 84, that's when I was born. So.
So they immigrated here, and then you're like the first son.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm second child, but yeah, first son. I have one older sister.
That's a lot of pressure, Dan. You got to be a doctor. Or
yeah,
shit, you know?
Dude. Like, it's not, that shit's real. Like,
yeah.
Like Asian parents. Like, I mean, they never like super super pressured me, but it was always kind of like a, I wish you would kind of thing. And that's almost worse in a way.
Because, yeah, it's more powerful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that, you want to rebel against the parents who are like, you're gonna do this. But then if it's just like, I wish you would do this, then it like,
it's kind of like that. I'm not mad at you, but I'm disappointed.
Yeah,
like the same thing.
Yeah. Well, I know that you have your dream job, and I'm excited to talk about that. But what's been, so I mean, We'll talk about it later, but you work for Gary V, which is so fucking sick, since 2018. But what was like your general work history working up to that? Like, also, just, and people don't know, you have a YouTube channel with like 10,000 subscribers on it. That's pretty cool. I just randomly found like 20 minutes ago. I was like, what? All right, dope. So you know how to work a camera and you know how to edit, and you can edit memes, obviously, with Rodeo Peanut. But that, like, what was, I don't know, what was your first job? What's your shittiest job? And then how did you learn all the video and editing stuff?
First job was working at a bike shop, putting together completes. Like, that's what I was just doing all day long. It was part-time, but that was my first job. I did that for maybe a year.
What'd you get paid per bike?
It was hourly, so I don't know. So,
that's whack. They should incentivize you like to go faster by building the, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, the bike shop owner, like, I guess he had like a little shop in his basement at his house. So like those, and I was technically, I guess, underage, like I was 15. So he like took me to his house and I'm like, where the hell are we going?
Come into my basement.
Yeah. Like, for real. Like, just go to the basement and just has this set up. He's like, all right, I'll be back later. I'm like, okay. So then I'm just like in there by myself for like 5 hours, just building completes.
And then you get $25 or something.
Probably something like that.
My first job was cleaning pools, and like, just, I thinking back, dude, like, you're taking advantage of young kids. If you're hiring a 15-year-old, you're totally like just screwing them over, not paying them anything. I was cleaning pools in the Arizona summer when I was like 15 or 16, just as a part-time job, getting like $6 an hour and just no air conditioning in the truck. And it's just miserable, but it's like, it teaches you like perspective as you get older. But anyway,
for sure.
What's your shittiest job that you've had besides that one? Building bikes isn't that bad.
No, it was great. I actually learned a lot from it. Like, I learned how to even like true a wheel.
That's not easy.
I guess my worst job, and it's, I don't regret it, but it was my worst job, was I was doing, I was an application developer for an insurance company. So basically like computer programmer.
Whoa.
With zero computer programming experience.
So you're just Googling shit?
Not even. Like, they provided like a boot camp thing. So like for a summer, they taught us how to code in the code that they were using, which was COBOL. It's like an ancient COBOL code. Okay. It's like very few companies even use it these days.
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
But coding, I understood, but insurance was like something that was so confusing to me that I like didn't understand. So like, even though the coding was very simple or simplified, it didn't make any sense to me, because I'm like, I don't know what any of this means. So like, I was there for a year and a half, or maybe even 2 years actually. And every day was just like, pretending like I'm working, because I just had no idea what I was doing. And it sucks, because it's like, you just have like this feeling of like, you have no idea what you want to do, you have no idea what you're doing, and you just feel super lost. And it was just like, I like every day was just anxiety of like looking over my shoulder of like, who's gonna be there, like seeing that I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
So like, I just couldn't take that anymore. And then, which leads to like, I heard Gary on the radio, on our local radio station.
No, and shit.
Like, just talking about like, it's not like not doing a job that you don't like. I mean, and then I think I like saw another post by him, like my friend shared on Facebook. So then I saw that and I was like, damn. And just started like getting all the gears going in my brain. And then I saw like Jim Carrey's commencement speech about like,
yeah, that's a good one.
His dad,
yeah,
the story about his dad, like how he had, like he was just trying to be an accountant, but then instead of trying to be a comedian, and then he ended up getting fired or whatever. So then the moral of the story was like, you can fail at something that you don't like, so you might as well try something that you actually love. And I was like, damn, like that like hit me hard. And then I like kind of started becoming friends with like Billy Perry, Austin Augie a little bit, and just
love
seeing
them guys
and just seeing them do the YouTube thing. And I was like, maybe I could do this too. And in hindsight, I should have probably done it on the side instead of trying to go all in. But
is that how you did it? You went all in?
Yeah, like I quit my job and was like, you know what? I'm going to try to become a YouTuber.
Fuck yeah. Good for you.
And it was hard, really, really hard. And I was definitely underestimated how hard it was. Like I thought, oh, anyone can do this. I could do it too. Like,
yeah,
very, very naive about how to approach it. So
what was your plan?
I mean, I was listening to Gary a lot at the time. So like my vision was like, or like, I was also like monetizing off Costanzagrams, which is my Seinfeld account. And
I've talked to you on that account.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I do remember that too. Actually,
that's crazy.
I was like, oh,
that's
man,
so crazy. That it's unrelated, but what the fuck? Okay, cool.
Yeah, I started monetizing off that account. Like that's when I was still at the computer programming job. But I was
tell
making
me about
just,
that. What does that look like, monetizing off a Costanzagram?
So the first thing I guess that started off was just like people that were making like merch, like Seinfeld t-shirts or something. They just wanted to pay to post, like for me to like shout them out basically.
Okay.
So like promo posts,
yeah,
for their product. Once that started happening, just more, I guess more people noticed. They're like, oh, this account does that stuff. So then they started hitting me up saying, hey, how much to do a post? Charging very, very little at the time.
Cause you don't know anybody. Right?
Exactly. Like I don't know anything. Like I'm just like, yeah, like, yeah, $100 sounds cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, like for a while that it was, I was just charging like all these like little accounts that just wanted to do promo stuff. And it was enough to like get by. And then I started like even doing my own kind of merch, or like little things like shirts or like mugs. And it was like just enough to like really like pay the bills or pay the rent really. So then I was doing that while I was still working at the computer programming job. So then I just started doing a little bit, like I saved up a decent amount and I was like, maybe I could survive on this for a while.
What's a decent amount? How much did you save up to feel like you could survive a while?
Yeah. I felt like, I think I had like maybe 10,000 at the time. So then
you can survive off that for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I was like, I think I'll be okay. And just went from there, like quit my job. And then at the same time, I had that much saved, just enough to pay for rent every month. And then also still continue to do more paid stuff, still continue to like try to sell my own stuff. Then decided to go all in on the YouTube thing, trying to, and I didn't even understand YouTube, like not like how I do now.
What do you mean?
I thought like going viral was super easy. Like, I was like, oh, okay, just make a video and it'll go viral. Like,
yeah.
Like, I didn't realize how hard it was to
rare. Yeah.
To do that. But I forgot the original question.
So you saved up money and you're going all in on YouTube. What was your plan? What was your plan with the YouTube?
So then, yeah, I heard Gary and I was really like listening to Gary. And he was just talking about being patient and like if it takes this could take 10 years. And then in my head, I was like prepared for that. But at the same time, there was a lot of outside voices that were making it harder to be patient. Where like my parents, my girlfriend at the time, my ex, and just felt very much like a lot of pressure of like,
dude, yeah, why are you being a loser just making YouTube videos? Go get a job.
Yeah, totally, totally.
Yikes. And
it's just funny how like that's such a normal thing these days now. And like kids want to be like
Yeah, they want to be a YouTuber when they grow up. Yeah.
And it's just like, it's just so it's such an interesting dynamic now, like in perspective about that. But yeah, like I thought if this takes 10 years, it'll be worth it. Like that's the mindset I had. Like I was like, all right, it's going to take 10 years. So I just got to fucking grind.
How often were you trying to upload?
What were
you making? Like I watched a little bit. I watched the one where you're how to improve your bunny hop 360s, which is pretty cool.
Thank you.
But like what type of other, like what did you start with? What was your first video that you remember?
I think I first started off with just trying to be like funny or like just do goofy things. Like, I'm not sure if it's my first video, but it was like when that T-Rex costume was like really popular at the time.
Yeah.
So I wore that to one of the jams and like rode in it.
Nice.
And that did okay. But I think even before that, I was trying to do the vlogging thing for a little bit.
That's the most exhausting thing ever, doing a vlog.
Yeah, like people give vloggers like I mean at the time like BMX guys gave like Austin Augie so much shit for vlogging, like thinking it's stupid or lame or whatever, but it's so difficult.
Yeah,
like I give so much props to all those guys that are like very comfortable doing vlogging.
Me
like,
too, man. I was one of the, I mean, I was never a big hater, but I was just like, yeah, vlogging. And then I challenged myself to do it for like 2 weeks straight or 50 days or something was the challenge. And then I made it 11 days. And I was like, this is the most time consuming, exhausting thing I've ever done. Like it starts when you wake up and it finishes when you go to bed and that's it. Like, it's so crazy how much work goes into it.
Yeah. And like, especially if you're doing it by yourself where you have to get if you're trying to do it like Casey Neistat, I guess, where like you're trying to get all these specific shots.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of time. And I'm just like I was losing my patience because I'm like, I don't even want to shoot this B-roll shot. Like,
yeah, just stupid time lapse of the street corner is taking an hour, like, and it's going to be a 1 second clip in the video.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And I'm like, that's where like I kind of started transitioning into more like how to's. And I actually learned that when I first started working for Gary, I was like, I mean, I guess in hindsight now, like it seems so obvious, but like at the time I didn't realize how much of a search engine YouTube was. Like people were looking up things on YouTube as a search engine. And I'm like, right. Like I didn't realize that. So then that's where like a lot of my more recent stuff is more like how to's, because I'm trying to help people that are searching for these types of things.
Yeah.
So, and I also just never felt comfortable with vlogging because, I mean, now I understand there's an entertainment value to it, but it didn't feel like I was providing value to like the viewers.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. Because my life's boring. Why do you want to watch this? But realistically, like people are just voyeurs or whatever. They want to like, you know, just escape and live somebody else's life.
Exactly. So then that's where I was like, oh man, I should probably do that more. Like even now I'm like, I've been thinking about doing it
a lot. I would 100% watch a vlog of you working for Gary. Like what a day in that life is.
That's a good point. I know. I just can't. I just keep thinking, like, just like you said, I keep thinking, oh, who cares? No one's going to care about this. Like, who cares about what I do?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been tough to, like, go with that transition of, like, or, like, that different mindset of, like, you know what? I should just do it.
I had that same thing with this podcast because I'm talking to video guys and I'm asking, like, all right, what gear do you have? And, like, all this heady, like, you know, gearhead stuff. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, nobody really cares. But then I'm getting a bunch of feedback of like, dude, I love that nobody else talks about this shit. Like, keep going. And I'm like, oh, okay, word. You know, that's how it goes. So on that note, what camera do you have? Like, what? Yeah. Well, I mean, let's get into your job with Gary Vee. It's fucking awesome. What gear do you have
to work with? I use a Sony A7C. In hindsight, right. I should have went with a Sony A7S3
Yeah.
instead. but I was trying to be, I don't know. It was just one of these weird decisions I made. I guess I was just trying to save a little bit of money.
Oh, you mean these?
Nice. Yeah, I should have went with
Quick
the
flex.
A7S3.
Get the A7 or the FX3.
That's a Sony?
You've seen those things, the Sony FX. There's a Sony FX6, which is like a big cinema camera, and then the FX3, which is like basically the same camera as the A7S III, just in a more like minimalist body.
Oh, damn. I wish I had known that earlier. You can see I clearly didn't do my research. Yeah.
But you can get to, like, you know, I barely use this camera to its full potential at all. Like, for, you know, like commercial filmmaking, there's so much potential that this camera has, but I'm using it on 1080, 60 frames per second, like the lowest bit rate, just to save file size. It's just like, for the type of shit that you do and I do, where it's just talking head content, you don't need it to be cinematic as fuck. Like, for the occasional project, yeah, but for right. the daily vlog stuff, there's no shot. I'm using like 4K with a color grade on it. Not doing that.
I'm totally on board with you on that.
So the A7C will get the job done. What kind of glass? What kind of lenses do you got?
I just use the Sony G Master, the 2470.
That's the most versatile. That's the only one you need.
Yeah. I mean, I need something more like a 70 to 200 now because I'm trying to get more.
Don't make me go grab mine. I'll show you.
I mean, it's hard because like I'm in so many different, every videographer is like in so many different scenarios. So like, I can't, I guess, complain, but at the same time, just the way I work with Gary is like everything's very like we got to be quick.
Yep.
And
24-70 is the only way to go.
Yeah. So yeah. Like, and I don't even have time to change a lens. Like if I need to.
Right.
Like I feel like I'm gonna miss the moment, so I'm like I don't even want to risk that. So I'll either just back up or walk closer if I have to.
Are you using a on-camera shotgun mic, or you got them lavaliered up?
Yeah, we have them lobbed up all the time.
What lav do you use?
A Sennheiser. I forget the model name. I think it's like that AVX, something like that.
Yeah, same. I'm not sure if it's the same one, but probably very similar. It's the best. It's like $900, and it's the best. It's the best lav mic I've ever touched, and it's just fire. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's dope. What does a day in the life look like? I mean, maybe that's not all your gear. What else do you got? You got gimbals and all that nonsense?
No, I don't. I don't like to. Like I said, with Gary, it's just like we always have to be like ready to go. So yeah. Like, I've learned to just hold. Just hold on for dear life, basically.
Film all day, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I bring my monopod around when I know it's going to be like a podcast or like a speech or something like that where it's going to be a Smart. Little bit longer.
Yeah.
But I had to go to a Mets game with him where like it was like winners for like people that he had like his own Topps baseball card with him on it.
Nice.
And I forget exactly what the contest was, but certain people won. So they all got like VIP access to like the Mets game. It was like a couple weeks ago. But where I wasn't allowed to bring anything more that fits into like a little like 16-inch bag.
Okay.
So all I could bring was my camera and no tripod or anything. And I just had to film and I was just like, oh, my arms were killing me. Like, it's so weird how like a camera that's what, maybe 7 pounds or something.
After an hour of holding it, your biceps are on fire.
Yeah.
I know your pain. I think there's a lot of us that know your pain. What is your job title exactly?
I am a content strategy manager.
Content strategy manager. So what does a content strategy manager do?
I don't think any other company, if someone at a different company had the same title, they're probably not doing the same exact thing that I'm doing.
Yeah.
because I'm doing everything from filming to or like logging his footage, organizing it, giving certain like moments to editors to like start creating, giving them creative feedback. And then also just making my own stuff sometimes. Like whenever I have free time, I try to edit still.
Nice. Dude, I think we have the same job.
Like probably.
I don't call it content strategy manager, but I might. I've been calling myself creative director, but
I mean that sounds just, like a better title to me.
just like capturing all the moments, and then we have a team of a couple of editors that I log all the footage. I like literally everything you just said. I take the moments, I assign them the project management software and be like, okay, here's the reels we need from this, here's the shorts we need from this, and here's the long form YouTube video in this Google Drive, put it together, let me review it. I watch it in frame, leave notes, they give me a second draft, I'm like, okay, this is good to go. And then we have a YouTube manager that publishes it, a thumbnail maker that puts something together, and we live the same life, Dustin. Same, that's crazy.
Same yeah. exact thing.
Yeah. That's badass. And doing your own YouTube channel makes you realize how valuable it is. Like how people take it like so lightly of just like, yeah, I could do a YouTube channel. But then you think about everything that goes into it, like optimizing your SEO. That's for one. It's just like, what words do you put on the title and the shit? And then what links are you putting? What does your thumbnail look like? You know, like is it that good? Blah, blah, blah. And then like the editing of it, that's a whole nother thing. Like, these I like because I'm not trying to, I don't have to go in and edit. I put an intro, the main thing, and then an outro, and that's it. But like the heavily edited YouTube videos that like, you know, 10 minutes long, but it covers an entire day. Like it's exhausting. That shit could take like 5 hours to edit, 6 hours, easy.
Definitely.
And then social media content on top of that to promote it all, you know? Fucking,
it's a lot of work.
It really is.
And like people, yeah, like I just remember like people, or even I even thought like, oh, this, oh, social media, that's easy. Like I just thought like, you know, it's like, oh, I'm just gonna post something, that's, it's so easy. But it's like, man, there's so much behind it that people don't even realize, and it's
tedious and time consuming.
Yeah.
Well, do you like it? It's been 4 years now.
Yeah, I mean,
have you gotten to know Gary?
Yeah, a lot. And like I tweeted out something the other day. I was like, I think I was meant to work in social media. Like, I really do. Like, just from
between Costanzagrams, Rodeo exactly, Peanut, like, and then Gary V. Dude.
Yeah, like I was like, I think I'm actually meant for, like, this is actually meant for me.
That's so, fire.
Like, yeah, like I was just thinking back to like Rodeo Peanut, like Costanzagrams, and like even my own stuff sometimes, or like I just feel like I kind of do understand how it works.
Yeah.
And I never really gave myself credit for that, like until this month.
Dude, me neither. I never credited my talents until like other people saw them and told me what they were, and I was like, okay, yeah, maybe you're right, you know? Like it's that humility can be good, except something, unless it's like when you're negotiating a price. And then you're like, oh yeah, I'm not that good, it's fine. But you don't realize that you're the best one in the state, you know? Anyway.
Yeah,
what's Gary like?
Way, like everyone's was like, is he really that crazy? Like that's what everyone always asks me. I'm like,
yeah,
no, not at all. Like he's super chill, super nice. Like I think a lot of people think he's like all about money, but he's not at all. Like doesn't give a fuck about money. Like he's not delusional. Like he's obviously needs money to like
to do
what he's trying to do. But like he really doesn't care that much about money. Like but yeah, he's just a really nice guy and he's genuine. Like it's not just like for the camera or anything. Like I see him, like when the camera's off, like he's just talking to people and it's the same exact thing.
Yeah.
And
I love that.
Yeah, like, and I just heard stories from like, I recently had like one of his childhood best friends, he like came to shadow at the company a month ago, just telling me all these stories when they were kids and stuff. I'm like, damn, it's wild. Like Like he's not full of shit.
Yeah.
And it just bothers me when people are like really like giving him so much, like just hating on him and stuff. And like, I understand where they're because they're not like gonna bother watching everything in Gary's life to understand, oh, okay, he's actually a good guy. Like, I get it.
Yeah, he's an easy target. Do you know who Tim Dillon is?
Yeah.
I love him, and he makes fun of Gary Vee, and I love Gary Vee, but it's all love, dude. It's so funny. And then there's all those people that do impressions of Gary Vee who I've seen him like collaborating with. Like, he brought them in, and that's so sick. Like,
yeah, like I met them at VCon. They're actually like really nice guys. They're really funny.
Yeah. Yep. You know, man. Yep. What? He's gonna hustle.
You could be one too now. There you go. There's your third side hustle.
My end to meet Gary Vee. That'd be fucking rad. Man, so what was it like trying to get that job, and how did that opportunity come up?
I got really, really lucky. So like that was ironically, it was my plan B. Like my plan A was like trying to become a YouTuber, trying to become the next Casey Neistat. Like, that was my plan A.
Wait, let's pause real quick on plan A, because you made it to 10,000 subscribers on YouTube. What was your peak revenue? Like what can, if you know, there's a kid out there that wants to start a BMX channel, how long were you doing it? How fast did you reach 10K? Did you ever make a point where you're making a living? Like, I just passed 1,000 subscribers and I'm making $4 this month. So watch out, world, you know?
I would say I had a lot of help. Like, I was very fortunate to have a lot of help on the way. And when I say that, I mean like working with like Mike at Merit. Like, he helped me with like advice of like what kind of things I should do. I had help.
Like content wise,
and also just kind of like little shout outs sometimes. So like, or like reposts of like something I would post and then kind of be like, go to his link in his bio and like just stuff like that.
Oh, like Mike would shout you out. On
his socials, on the Merit account and stuff like that. That way, like, it would help drive to my account.
Yeah, that's so huge.
I did have help. So it's like, it's a little bit different than someone that's starting from zero with that doesn't know anyone. And I'm not saying that's impossible. It's just more like it's going to be a little bit tougher.
Right.
But I think I got to, it took me like a year to get to 1,000. And I think also just the Rodeo Peanut video that I put out helped, like, just, you know, becoming on like the front page of the Come Up when that was still alive.
Yeah.
That
was a big deal to be on the front page of the Come Up.
Yeah, totally. And I think that helped. So like, but then it was really slow. I don't remember like what I was at when I joined Gary. I think I was around 5,000. I'm not sure though. Maybe 6,000. I forget.
Subs, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe even less, but for anyone that is thinking of doing YouTube, I'd say consistency is important.
Yeah.
Learn how to do thumbnails and, like you said, titling. Like,
yeah.
I'm thinking now to do more titles based on like what things people search. Like, that is what SEO is, but just think about like what people would be searching for.
Did you ever use a tool like TubeBuddy?
I used vidIQ.
Yeah, similar thing. Yeah,
TubeBuddy, I think I had, but I didn't really understand it. Like, analytics is still something that I have a tough time understanding. Like, I don't know what an impression really is.
I still don't, like, I've looked at the acronyms CPM, CRM, and I'm still, like, I've learned it 17 times, and I'm like, wait, what's a CPM again,
like,
dude?
Yeah, like, I look it up, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's what it is.
Yeah. Forget immediately. Like, what was your best month, money wise?
Oh, I wouldn't even get paid monthly. Like my views were always like, I got paid probably like every 6 months.
I still don't understand how it works, like how YouTube Pay works. How did it work for you?
I think you have to make at least 100 for them to like pay you out.
Okay.
Yeah. So like, let's say you make 100 in January, then they'll pay you out in January. But okay. Let's say you only made 20 in January, then you make 20 in February, then you make 30 in March. Okay. And then like up until you get to 100, that then they start paying you out.
Interesting.
At least that was my experience, because I never went viral.
Yeah.
But my video, like I actually got an email today saying like I got denied my payout because I think I only made like $20 or something. I haven't been posting at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that's how it worked for me, at least. Like I never really got monthly payments. It was always just like whenever I made $100, like yeah. It would just send it to me.
So it sounds like it was never like a living type.
No, not for like those for the first 2 years when I was unemployed and just doing the YouTube thing, I didn't make anything. I think my first check was actually like right when I started working for Gary. Like I took a picture of it, forgot. But it was like $100.
You gotta frame that shit, dude. That's awesome. My first YouTube check is going right there, dude. That's fire. And then to think about like Gary V's channel and the monetization of that, and just like the levels of the guy I work for and his monetization is so crazy, dude. It is all about consistency. Seven days a week he's doing one upload and one short per day, and then on top of like every day two reels, two TikToks, two Facebook. And Gary's a big proponent of that strategy. How many are you guys doing? Like, are you in charge of posting too, or you get the content and then you dish it out, or are you responsible for posting as well?
I personally don't post, but there are people on the team that do for like certain things like YouTube, TikTok, LinkedIn.
Gary seems like the type to post his own shit.
Yeah, on Instagram.
Yeah.
He writes all the copy, like all the captions and all that stuff.
Do you guys plan that out? Like for the week, you have these ready-made.
We do it every single day.
Every single day, Gary will sit down and write out the copy for the posts.
We have a group chat where, like in the morning, we send him 5 things. Here's okay. five options for you if you feel like posting. He looks at them, decides yes or no, and then writes copy for it. And then he's like, here you go. And then
nice.
We post.
Who's we? How big is this team?
It's about 30 people.
Fuck.
Yeah. I mean, that consists of the director, managers, editors, graphic designers, what we call PSPs, which are like platform strategy producers. They kind of like are in charge of certain social media platforms.
Platform strategy producers. Well, that makes sense to me because I noticed TikTok rewards completely different shit than Instagram does. Like the algorithm is so different.
Mm-hmm.
Is that why there's a PSP?
Yeah, because like I was a PSP for a while for TikTok, and it helped me learn, like understand like what works on TikTok, what doesn't work on TikTok.
How do you learn that? Like the algorithm is such a mysterious overlord. How did you learn shit?
I personally did just by being on there, like just studying like the For You page, like seeing a video, being like, okay, this got 200K likes. Why? So then I just really start watching it. Oh, because there's some, usually I'd say it's because there's a curiosity factor.
Okay.
Like, for instance, a Karen video where like you just see someone's third person view of like them filming something. And it's like a voyeur shot of like two people arguing over there, and you don't even really hear what they're saying, but you're now I'm curious, like, oh, what are they arguing about?
Yeah.
and then I keep watching.
Yeah.
And then I find out like just some whatever typical Karen yelling at someone.
Yeah.
And I just, and I'm like, okay, cool. Now I'm done. But I would say the biggest thing on TikTok is, well, I guess everywhere, but TikTok for sure is the retention rate. So yeah. Like the more someone watches that entire video, like the better success they'll have.
Right. I wonder if it, so like in your opinion, would you rather push out a really high quantity and not have a high retention rate of all of them? Maybe like the occasional one gets a high retention rate, or only post shit that will, like post less shit, but have it be higher retention rate, so that your like overall percentage of retention rate is way higher than if you like just throw a bunch of shit at the wall and see what sticks.
So the ideal thing is to do both.
Yeah.
But if you had to make me choose, like I could only do one or the other, I would probably lean more towards trying to get a better retention rate.
I think, like, I agree. Yeah.
Like I do really believe quality and quantity, but if you're like, have a gun to my head, I have to choose one.
Right.
I would say quality
is
more important.
I agree. Yeah. That's interesting, man.
But you also like can't let like quality stop you from like, oh, it's not perfect enough. I can't post it because it's not perfect enough. Like that's different. That's kind of like, that's
perfectionism is also procrastination at the same time.
And insecurity and stuff. So like that's a totally different story.
Yeah.
But I would say like being thoughtful about something is important.
Yeah.
Like if the beginning of a video is just some random gibberish and it's like, I have no idea what this person is saying, in 2 seconds, I'm already like, fuck this. I'm
over it. Yeah, for real. And it's so easy to just get away from it. It's
exactly.
This is crazy, dude. I don't know if I want to keep going in this world of just like battling for attention of just, oh, please stay and watch me for 15 seconds, you know?
I know. But
it is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it really depends on how you look at it. Like, yes, attention can be like weird, but it is the most important thing at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, that's how everyone that, I guess, is trying to be in their own definition of successful. Like it's because they know how to like attract the attention somehow. Yeah. Like, and not necessarily in like a malicious or evil way, but they just know how, like either through entertainment or like they just know how to educate.
Yeah.
Like maybe that. So there's just ton of different ways that you can do it, but attention is just super important.
I'm watching it live. So me, Jamil Damji and Pace Morby are the guys that I got in lucky to be involved with. And I feel like they'll meet Gary Vee at some point. Like they'll be speaking on this. Actually, Pace did speak on the same stage as Gary just recently at one of the VideoCon. The branding of the whole stage was like yellow and black, and it was
Think Media.
I
think it was that guy Sean. I forgot what his Sean something, but he's like the host of it, I think. But he has like a big YouTube channel, I think.
Yeah, just I see what you're saying, and some people just have it, and you know, Pace and Jamil both have, you know, attention, education, entertainment all in one, and it's pretty magical. And Pace has built his team up to, you know, over 15 people to where you're at. Jamil and I have built, you know, maybe we're at 5 people, but we're playing the same game that you are. I don't think we ever actually covered how you got the job. I asked you and then I started talking about something else.
It's all good.
Yeah.
It was 2 years after I quit my job. I was watching Daily V, which was Gary's vlog.
Yep.
And the title of it was called "We're Looking for Content Creators." And I was like, oh, what? Cool. So then I looked at the description. There was an application there. I applied, got rejected, and then was like, okay, whatever. I think I applied again. That was in September 2017. Then I applied again in December 2017, got rejected again. Then randomly, and I was not consistent, like, or persistent. of like following up. Like I just kind of was like, oh, I suck. I failed.
Yeah.
But then in February, the director of Team Gary at the time, Andy, he emailed me, was like, hey, we'd like you to come in for an in-person interview and just, you know, chat and stuff. It's like, okay, cool. So I went there. February
just like 20. That? You were just like, yeah. Okay, cool? Or were yeah. you shitting your pants with excitement?
I
mean,
yes, I was definitely shitting my pants. But went there February 2018, did an interview. He gave me a homework assignment. I sent it in the next day. Never heard from him again. And I'm like, I followed up like 1 week after. No reply. And I was like, I fucking suck. And then I just kind of was like, all right.
What was the homework assignment?
Just make a piece of content like that I thought Gary would post. And in hindsight now, it was terrible. Okay. It was pretty bad. But I think the one thing that I told Andy at the time was that might have convinced him to like kind of be interested in me was like, I think Gary should go more into the humor aspect because like all of his stuff was so serious or like.
Yeah, he was pretty serious for a while back then.
Yeah, or like very businessy. I just thought like maybe there should be some humor added to it because I think comedy is just something that everyone can relate to.
Yes.
So I think that's what like kind of made them intrigued about me. But anyway, I got no reply. And then 4 months later, or no, yeah, 3 months later, or yeah, 3 or 4 months later, it was in June, I was filming my a video like I had a toothpick, never posted it. But in the middle of filming, like I get a call, it's Andy. He says, hey, are you still interested in the job? I'm like, yes. And he said, can you start Tuesday? I'm like, sure. So like I said, I got really, really lucky because I wasn't being persistent. I wasn't like a lot of other people were like, yeah, I'll do this for free and all this stuff. Like, I'd love to work for you. Like, I was not good at that at all. I felt a little bit desperate if I did that.
Right.
So I didn't want to. But went in June. They gave me like things to do, and I just like went all in. Like I always compare it to. I mean, it wasn't as bad, but like I compared it to like. The Pursuit of Happiness, where he like just grinded, like didn't care, like didn't drink. I didn't drink water, like because I didn't want to go to the bathroom, just like him. I was like, I'm not gonna waste time. Like,
wow,
I'm gonna, like just going hardcore as edited as much as I can, because I always felt like, I didn't come from like real life experience as far as like being an editor before or anything. Like, I was very self taught.
Yeah.
So I thought I had to work harder because otherwise I'm not going to be able to keep up with everyone else. So yeah, I was just grinding like for 7 months. And then
so what was your job at first, in-house editor?
Technically, I think I was just a freelancer for the first month.
Okay. And
then I became a creator resident, which is pretty much like you get paid, but you don't get like, you're not a full-time employee.
Okay.
And then 7 months later, they offered me full-time job, as a creator. And then just went from there.
So I imagine VaynerMedia is not all, it's not just producing Gary's content.
No. Not even close. Like Gary's content is probably like 5% of the company.
That's interesting, because like I'd never get to peek behind, you know, like what is VaynerMedia doing, you know, like how many clients and how do you get the clients and what do you offer them? And you like, he's built this machine of content creators and creation and stuff, but like, man, like that's got to be so exciting to for Gary and just for, I don't know, anybody in the higher up in the company of like, okay, we just got Like, who's the biggest client? I guess you probably can't say who your clients are, but like,
I mean, Gary said it publicly, so I guess it's fine. But like, Pepsi, Anheuser-Busch.
That's fucking crazy, dude.
Chase is a big account.
Content creation for Pepsi.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. Like, I don't even know, honestly, like what a lot of what VaynerMedia does. Like, that's how big it is.
Yeah, because, it feels unreal.
Yeah, like I don't know what a lot of the company does, because it's more like a lot of it's very high level.
Yeah,
I've talked to like a lot of the other leaders and like other teams and stuff like that. But they do a lot of different things. Like, we are more about, I guess, like at least Team Gary feels more like the nitty gritty type of stuff, where like we are really doing the research on like, not real like research, but like we're like really doing the digging and stuff on like why something works, or like what's going on TikTok, or what's going on
yeah,
LinkedIn or whatever it is. And then we kind of like, and I'm not saying like other people in the company don't do that, but like we are definitely more hardcore with that. And it kind of just like trickles down to everyone. Like, because like we tell Gary, Gary tells everyone else, and then it's just like kind of like the whole company kind of like works together on it.
You're in the circle of trust.
Yeah.
That's dope. Much.
Yeah. And then Gary's also just doing like so much, like he has like 20 companies or something. Like, he does VaynerX is a holding company, but it's got VaynerMedia. It's got Ava Nostradam, which is basically the product, like, it used to be Vayner Productions, but it's a production company. Like, they just do like all the filming and all the production stuff for like making commercials and stuff like that. There's Vayner Sports, there's Sasha Group, now V Friends, Tingley Lane. There's just so many companies that I don't even know how he keeps track of all this.
Yeah, for real. That's unbelievable. Man, it's crazy to even think about. What's a day to day? Are you required to go into the office? You got the freedom to edit from home, or like, where is the office? Are you living in New York? What's your life like right now?
So, it's more of a hybrid thing right now. Right now, we only have to go in once a week, like technically just Wednesdays, but I usually go in a little bit more often because I have to film Gary. Like if he's doing a podcast or something like that.
And you're filming behind the scenes of the podcast? Are you actually setting up the actual podcast and then also filming behind the scenes, like one man army, the whole thing?
One and a half man army, I guess.
Cool.
But like, I do mainly the camera setup of actual podcast itself.
Okay, gotcha.
But there hasn't been too many in-person ones recently, so it's not like so critical. Yeah. But there are a lot of things that he does virtually, but I'd rather film it in person so like there's like the quality is a little bit better.
Yep.
I usually go in maybe like 3 times a week, maybe even 2 or 3 times a week, but other than that, I work from home in New Jersey.
And the office is in New York though?
Yeah, it's in Midtown. So it takes me about like 40 minutes by bus. My bus is like right outside the building, so it's nice and convenient.
That's fire. Hell yeah. I wanted to live a day in your life or a week in your life. That'd be fire.
It's
good for you, man.
It's very all over the place.
Yeah. Are you happy?
I am. I would like to go back. I've been thinking a lot more about just editing more, because like it is the one place where I feel there's like I remember this even when I was like not working for Gary, when I was just like editing my YouTube videos, like 8 hours would go by and I'm like, whoa, like that was 8 hours, like I would just be like,
you really liked it. Yeah
I was just like so tuned in and like zoned in on like editing.
Yeah.
And it's like where like I always compare it to The girl in Inception, where she says it's like true creation when she was like changing all the shit in the dream.
Yeah.
That's how I feel when I'm editing. Like, it's just like me in my world building Legos, like in a way, like, or like sculpting a sculpture, like carving away at little things. And I'm like, this is where like I really like to be. Like, it's just
where I love that analogy, the sculpting analogy, because that's kind of what it is. You take a big, you just plop it all in there, kind of, and then just chop it all up.
And then, like, even like the littlest thing, you're like, oh yeah, I gotta take that out.
What are you using to edit?
Premiere Pro.
Nice. Gang. Same here. Yeah. Do you bust out After Effects for anything?
I never figured out how to use it. I tried, and then I'm like, I don't understand this.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah, I think I just need someone to give me like very, very like 101, and I think I'll be good after that. But
I
need someone's help.
I got you. We'll run through the basics, and I'll relearn as I teach you, because it rarely comes up that you need After Effects. You can do most shit within Premiere Pro.
Right.
And I don't know. I think less is more. In my opinion, less is more when it comes to the content for these guys.
100%. Like, people think like it's all like, well, especially editors think like you have to do so many fancy things, but the regular viewer does not give a fuck.
They don't give a fuck. Yeah.
Like, they don't even notice like that you did this. Like, they don't notice shit. Like, maybe they do subconsciously, but they don't care.
There was that trend a couple years ago where like you would draw an outline and it would like, you know what I mean? People were tracing shit and then animating that tracing, and then it would disappear. That was a big trend for a while, and that's done in After Effects. I'd have to show you an example, but just like just trying way too hard. And then the other thing that really bugs me is when people use templates from like Motion Array for their YouTube intro, of just like womp 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 womp, like Peter McKinnon type edit intro.
Right.
It's just like, get out of here. Yeah. It's like, you could take a regular like kid out of college, and if he knows how to use templates, he can get a job at a big corporation being an editor. And that's like, good for you. But that's I'm a purist, dog. Let's keep it simple. Less is more.
I totally agree. Like, everything is like that. Less is more. Like, less to a certain extent, but less is more.
Yeah. Minimalist. What about in the BMX world? Are you making shit BMX video wise or anything? Are you looking for more work outside of VaynerMedia?
Not really. Like, I'm pretty swamped with Gary stuff, and like you said in the beginning, where like when I'm like at the end of the day, I don't want to edit anymore. Like, I don't even want to look at a screen. Like, I just kind of want to just chill and kind of unwind a little bit, or even ride or something. Like, I'd rather, that's why it's been also hard to like do the vlogging thing. Like, even on the weekends when I ride, like, I just want to live in the moment sometimes.
Yeah. And enjoy riding bikes.
Exactly. So it's like, it's really been tough to like wanting to create content, because I'm just like, this is my time where like, I just want to, you know, enjoy life, just be with my friends or whatever. Or, like, be with me with my wife and just hang out.
Oh,
like,
he's a married man.
Yeah.
We went from an ex-girlfriend who was hating to you're married.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, she stuck by my side like when I was a bum. Like, I was at my lowest point, and she just completely believed in me. Like, said, you're like, supported me. I had no job. Like, I was doing the Uber thing, but like, she supported both of us.
Shit, you're gonna make me tear up, man.
Yeah.
How'd you propose?
We went to this area. It's like, it overlooks the city. Like, it's on the Jersey side, but it's like by the cliffs over here. And I took her there like maybe one of our first dates, just because I thought it was a nice view. But then I brought her back there again, just because I wanted to. I told her we were going because I needed to take photos of some Costanzagrams merch, so I brought it with me.
Nice, good cover.
But then I ended up, I was planning to propose, and then proposed, and it was all good.
Fuck yeah. What about, how did you guys meet?
Tender.
Fuck yeah. No hate on that. The longest relationship I ever had so far was from Bumble. It's just the new wave, you know.
Yeah, for real. I mean, my sister met her husband on Bumble, I think. And my one of my other best friends, he met his wife on Bumble as also. So don't hate on the online dating. I think it makes the most sense, man. Like, everyone was like, oh, fucking online dating sucks. I'm always like, yo, I think it's the best, because it's like, now you know, like, when you go up to a person at the bar, like, you don't know, like, if they're just being pity of like, oh, sure,
right,
here's my number. Like, and then they're just going to fucking fuck you button every single time you call or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, if they swiped on you on Tinder or whatever, they like you.
Yeah.
Like, most likely they like you. So like, I always was like, even though with me, like, I didn't get any, a lot of matches, but when I did, I'm like, yes.
Like, yes.
So I think, yeah, it's for anyone that's single out there, I know it's a rough ride, but when you do get a match, it's like
it feels amazing.
Yeah,
being single is a rough ride. You gotta take care of yourself and love yourself, like, you know, like,
totally
love yourself as if you're somebody you care about, you know, and do the things that, yeah, just take care of yourself. To all the single young BMX riders out there, take care of yourself.
For real.
The right one will come. All right, let's just to wrap it up, rapid fire questions. Who are some of your favorite riders right now? Are you still paying attention to BMX?
I mean, I am. I mean, not super, super deep, but yeah, there's people that I really like. I like Alex Donaghy.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm sure everyone does, but like, I like Brock, because Brock Rayford.
Oh, he's fucking goat status.
Yeah, like, everyone already knows that, but I think something about more than his riding, like, it almost like he has some kind of humility to him that I see.
He's one of the biggest sweethearts in the game.
And I like that a lot about him.
Yeah.
Damn, I forgot. Like, it was someone that I like really fucked with heavy. I forgot who.
Devin Smiley.
No, not really.
Bobby Canoed.
Of course. I rewatched your part. Like, I forgot what video it was from 2015.
You did like
a full cab up a 3-set, and I was like, holy shit.
Mediocre at best. Bada bing, bada boom. Hell yeah. It's trippy to me doing this podcast, because I literally assume nobody knows who I am still, and I don't know. I've been in the game for 17 years, so I'm just like, I'm just gonna ignore it and start talking like we know each other. Anyway. All right. Give me three, since you were a admin on Rodeo Peanut, what are three rules in BMX that shall never be broken? Obviously kidding, but
yeah. I mean, what are the rules? My personal thoughts, song jacking, I never liked. Like, you're not allowed to, use Diary of a Madman, like, ever.
Yep.
Which
is getting harder to follow because there's so much content now, but I'm with you.
I think with at least classics, that should be a rule. Like, you can't use Metallica Battery. I'm sorry, you can't use it. Like, Van Homme, that belongs to Van Homme. I'm sorry, you're not allowed to use it.
Yeah.
But yeah, totally with edits these days, I get it. It's so much harder. There's so many videos out there. But classics, I say don't touch them. I'm not so against one up, but maybe ABD. I'd say ABDs, like, you shouldn't do that. I mean, if you do it for fun on Instagram, that's different. But if you're like, if it's your last clip in a edit, that's kind of like
in a serious project. Yeah.
Nah, like, I don't think
didn't
so.
Didn't you know? Yeah.
I think that's also something that's missing in BMX. Like, we're not really doing as much history or like homework. Like,
right.
And not in like a ABD way, more like a, we should try to embrace our history way. Like, skateboarders do it. Like, I mean, that's how the Tony Hawk documentary like happened, because like everything was documented and like they're embracing the history of it. But like, I don't think there's enough of that on BMX, where like people aren't watching the older videos to like just to learn, like, whoa, yeah, people, someone did this 30 years ago. Like,
for
that's
real.
Wild.
You watch some of those older videos and it's just like one trick will stand out. It's just like, oh my God, like he did a backwards lucky on a vert ramp for like 25 feet and then drop back in. That's just still so crazy, you know?
Yeah, like I completely underappreciated vert. But like when I watched some clips recently, I was like, that's insane. Like,
vert is insane, dude.
Yeah, like I can't even air like 2 inches out of
and
that
it just
thing.
Feels like it's gone. Like vert, yeah. Vert is like, there's no big vert contests that I'm aware of anyway.
Yeah, me neither. I guess the third one, I think that's really it. I just don't like ABDs that much and song jacking, unless it's like
respectable rules.
Like, if what about you, because maybe that'll like trigger something.
So like if you're on a team trip and you are more capable than another rider on the trip, but the other rider is like trying a hanger up this rail, you shouldn't go and hanger up the rail while he's trying it, you know? Just like,
yeah,
look, it's easy. Unless your homie's like that and he's talking shit, because I've seen that done too. But just respect amongst the crew. And then, yeah, the ABD is pretty cringy. Like, I filmed, for example, my buddy Troy doing a turn down over a cool spot gap, and we're saving it for a video. And then I see another homie on Instagram go and do the same exact, but did it worse type shit. And it's just like, you know, like, what can you do? Like,
yeah.
I've gotten over the, I'm not over the ABD, but it's just like, fuck it, you know? I it's hard to know anymore. Like, if we're at a spot and somebody's about to do something awesome and that they're stoked on doing, and we can't think of somebody, like, we can't remember, oh, has this been done? I'm like, just send it, dude. Like,
yeah,
if it has been done, fuck it, whatever. Right. Like, we'll pay homage to them, you know? Like,
exactly.
If we find out. But like, what other rules?
If you try to, like, I don't know, I keep using Van Homan as an example, but if you like try to manual that black rail in Pennsylvania, like, yeah, no, like, don't do that. Like,
no, I'm gonna manual bar it.
Yeah. Like, things like that, I guess.
Only other thing that me personally is just having respect for the people around you. Like, I don't like punk ass behavior towards like security guards or like
same
citizens. Just like, if a Karen comes up, like, you can diffuse the situation so much better with honey than you can with fuck you, bitch, you know? Yeah, like, I agree.
I totally agree.
And that's just like immature, give me attention type attitude that a lot of young kids have, but yeah, it's part of the game.
Yeah, especially if they're being nice. Like, I know some security guards are like actually nice. They're just like, hey, you guys can't do that. And I'm like,
right,
totally, no problem. But like, yeah, some people like give them shit like fuck you,
yeah,
or like whatever. And I'm like, don't do that. Like,
it's unnecessary.
They're like saying, oh, like, I remember like someone I was making fun of the security guard saying, oh, you get paid nothing or some shit. I was like, don't say that. Let's,
yeah, for it.
Like, just being mean for no reason. Like,
yeah,
the hell.
Be nice. And then, yeah, treating young kids and fans the right way. And that I haven't run into too many assholes like that disrespect kids for coming up. Because, you know, like, oh my God, you're my hero. Like, and some, maybe once or twice I've seen some people be like, nah. But most of the time it's everybody's pretty good and respectful. And that's we could sit here and think of rules all day. What's okay, how long were you involved with Rodeo Peanut?
So I think it was like around 2014, 2016 maybe. So yeah, maybe like 2 years. Yeah, 2 years.
What was the biggest drama that you remember? The biggest trouble or the most controversial shit? I was just scrolling through an account that's called Rodeo Peanut Sucks. And I'm not sure if it's the genuine thing. The genuine thing is gone, right? Or is it?
No, I think that's the right one. It's just okay. we lost the name when they were like messing around with the account name. Yeah. So like, I think someone changed it to my name for like a day, like as a joke.
Yeah.
And then someone else noticed and stole the name like right away. Couldn't get it back. And I'm like, idiot, look what you did.
Look what you did. You ruined it.
Yeah. So now,
man, it was such a fun mystery of not knowing who the fuck Rodeo Peanut was. Like just this meme account in the BMX world that everybody talked about. Like,
yeah. I mean, I guess to quickly give you a little bit of satisfaction, someone was kept changing, or like someone kept trying to, like, because I did, like, I wanted to stay anonymous for a while, but then someone kept saying like, oh it's Dustin. So then I'm like, all right, fine, like if you're gonna like ruin the surprise, whatever you want to call it, then fine, I'll take the torch then. So then, and then they're like, oh, you ruined it. I'm like, you ruined it by like trying to out me. So it's like, I don't know. It was just kind of a dumb play on both ends, I guess. But
do you feel like naming the others who were involved?
I mean, I don't think they care, but just to respect them, I'd rather not.
Can I guess?
I can't. Well, I'm not gonna.
Tell you at that point. I think Jared Washington is involved, and you, and then maybe three other people. I don't know. I don't know who else. But that's the word on the streets. Is Jared Washington involved? I will neither confirm nor deny these accusations.
I mean, came up with a name, so.
All right. Yeah. Cool. You got a good poker face, Dustin. What's in the future? What are you doing tomorrow, man? What are your goals?
You know, working like always. Yeah. I'm going to try to edit something because, like, there was something that we filmed with Gary that I just really liked. So I'd like to edit it and put it out.
Same here. Going to edit work tomorrow. Are you going to make babies? Do you have babies?
Don't have any right now. One day, I think, I've always kind of felt like I wanted to, because I would like to raise a child to have a better life than I have. And not in like a monetary way, in like a confident and self-esteem way.
Dope. Dude, that's awesome. You should definitely have one. Good for you.
Thanks.
Any advice for young BMX riders out there listening?
I would say stick with it. I know it's hard. I know, and don't listen to other people. Like if someone says it sucks or it's lame or like let's ride scooters instead. I mean, if you really, really want to, that's different, but try not to think about outside validation so much as far as, or outside voices. Think about like what you like. Like I went through that too, where like everyone was skateboarding and skateboarding was cool, but I'm like, I can't skate. So I'm better at riding a bike. So same. I'm going to ride a bike.
Yeah.
So stick to what you think you are better at. And if you're not good at it, that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. There's other things you can still do to be involved. Like you could always become a filmer, or you could be just, you know, be a homie. Like you just hang out.
Yeah.
So
I highly recommend becoming a filmer, because then you have options.
Yeah, you know? Totally. Like there's so many options when you, I mean, I started filming on a shitty camcorder when I was like 15.
Yeah.
Like I just stole my parents' camcorder and just started filming stuff.
Same.
So yeah,
look at us now. You're working for Gary Vee. I'm not working for quite as big of names, but we are here.
Yeah. You know,
making a living off of just content creation. I'm so stoked that I got to pick your brain about this stuff, man. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, man. I'm very stoked too.
Pumped for you, pumped for your job, pumped for you being married and having babies someday.
Thanks, man. It means a lot.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
All right, that'll wrap it up. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. Smash that like and subscribe. See you in the next one. Next week, Trey Jones. Hello, you've reached the end of the episode. Thank you for watching. Make sure you like and subscribe and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. See you next week.